Blog Talk Radio.
Skyrocketing healthcare and insurance costs. Extremely modest gains against chronic disease. Thousands die yearly due to drug reactions. What can be done? Thomas Edison is quoted as declaring, "The doctor of the future will give no medicine, but interest his patients in diet and nutrition, exercise, and the care of the human frame. He will teach them about the cause of all disease." The doctors of the future are here. Welcome to Phase 3 Wellness with your host, Keith Henry, ND, one of the doctors of the future.
Hi, and welcome to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for joining me on this beautiful Sunday evening. I'm broadcasting live here from Orlando, Florida area. My name is Dr. Keith Henry. I'm a naturopath. I address natural healing from a Christian perspective. I'd like to thank you for joining me. I'd like to welcome you wherever you may be listening from in the world, here in the U.S. or wherever you may be located. Special welcome to my friends over in Costa Rica. I'd like to let you guys know that we have a very interesting show for you today. I'd like to remind you that we are also here on blogtalkradio.com. If you log in, we have the chat room open as well. And so if you would like to log in and chat, you can do so, or you can just listen. If you want to call in with a question or comment, you can do so at 917-889-2207. That's 917-889-2207. We have an interesting show for you today. We're going to be talking a little bit about the liver. I'm going to start off talking about the liver, a very important organ, as most of you know. And we're also going to talk about some of the drugs that can really place restrictions on your sex drive. We also are going to be looking at some of the benefits of honey in our healing food segment. And then in our healing herb, healing supplement segment, we'll talk a little bit more about milk dose. So we've talked about milk dose in the past, but since we're going to be talking a little bit about the liver in this first segment, now one article that we're going to be dealing with, we decided just to talk also about one of the best herbs for the liver, which is milk thistle. Again, if we time permitting, we're going to also look at an article that was entitled "Breast Cancer Red Flag Ignored by Many Women." It's very interesting. You're going to talk about how your survival rate, or even the chances of developing cancer, could be associated with your level of this particular nutrient, which we've talked about on here before. Again, my name is Dr. Keith Henry. We are going to have a very exciting and informative show for you today. Now, I'd like to remind you also that you can visit me over on Facebook. Just go to facebook.com/naturedoc. That's facebook.com/naturedoc. Also, as you listen to the commercials that we play on here, if you want to visit my website at phase3ministries.com/the blog, if you go to phase3wellness.com/WordPress, that's where you'll find the majority of the health information there on the blog, on the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog. And there's loads of information there with respect to natural healing and natural medicine. Again, I'm going to take a quick break. I'm going to come back, and we're going to get right into today's show. Thank you for listening. I'll be back in just a moment.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches, and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
You're listening to Phase 3 Wellness with Dr. Keith Henry. Be sure to listen right here every week at the same time. You can also visit Dr. Henry on Facebook at facebook.com/naturedoc. Thanks for listening, and here's to your health.
Hi.
Hi, and welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. Again, thank you for joining me on this beautiful Sunday afternoon. We're going to go ahead and start with our first article. Now, if you're a first-time listener, this first segment is called the Week in Natural News Review, and where you look at some of the natural news health articles that have been published, that have come out, and we review them, analyze them, and talk about them. And the second segment is the healing foods, where we talk about a food or a group of foods, or sometimes one food, or depending on fruit or vegetable or nut or whatever, and some of the benefits of that food, the nutritional benefits of that food or whatnot. And then last, and the final segment, the third segment, is the healing herb or healing supplement segment. And in that segment, we talk about, I think, herb or healing supplement. This week we will revisit milk thistle. So we've talked about it before in the past, but we're going to revisit it again since we'll be talking a little bit about the liver today here in this first segment. Now, this first segment is, or rather, this first article that we're looking at, this first segment, is from naturalnews.com. It was titled, The Benefits of the Liver, or How to Keep Your Liver Healthy, essentially. And this article is taken from naturalnews.com. And it's written by, I think it's a chiropractor, Dr. David Jenner, I think his name is. Anyway, he says, he goes on and pointing out and talking about this particular, talking about the way the liver functions. He points out, rightly so, that the liver is, in fact, one of the most important of all of our vital organs. It's responsible for filtering and also for detoxifying the different type of environmental toxins and pathogenic organisms. And it's been, he didn't say this in an article, but it's been, the functions of the liver has been put at between 3,000 and 5,000 different functions that it carries out in helping to detoxify the body, et cetera. It's also part of a vital part of our digestive system, because it converts nutrients from the food we eat into essential blood components. It helps, and this article points out how it helps to store vitamins and minerals, and it also helps produce key proteins and enzymes that actually maintain hormonal balance in the body. He says, further, the liver helps the immune system fight infections, and it removes microorganisms from the bloodstream, and it also produces bile, which is essential for digesting fats in our diet. As you know, the liver produces the bile, which is stored then in the gallbladder, and is provided to the body as needed for digestion of fats. Now, he asked the question in the next portion of his article, what harms the liver? And he points out how the most harmful things for liver health include environmental toxins, infectious organisms, alcohol, and poor diet. He goes on to point out how exposure to environmental toxins and chemicals can backlog the liver as it tries to neutralize and deactivate these poisonous molecules. He says these chemicals include benzene, disinfectant byproducts, heavy metals, pesticides, and cigarette smoke, among other things that he didn't mention, but I'm just pointing out the other things in general. He says also the infectious organisms are a major cause of liver stress and inflammation. He goes further to say the most well-known organism are the hepatitis virus, with the hepatitis B and C viruses being the most dangerous. He says further, any sort of chronic infection in the body, such as Lyme, influenza, aflatoxin, and other mycotoxins, etc., have the ability to inflame and damage the liver, either inflame and or damage your liver. Of course, as we talk about on here, he points out how poor diet is the thing that damages the liver. He says alcohol and poor diet damage the liver. He says he goes on to explain how alcohol must go through the liver's detoxification cycle to be metabolized and deactivated while it's in the body. He says, as well as many of you already know, chronic alcohol consumption actually depletes the liver of valuable glutathione, which is an amino acid. And glutathione is a very effective amino acid. It helps the energy level in the cells, amongst other things. But it's one of the things that it does. But he goes on to point out how liver actually depletes the liver of glutathione and sulfur compounds, as well as some other elements such as zinc, depletes the body of zinc, of riboflavin, of B6, of folate, and of B12. He goes on to say how poor blood sugar signaling and a diet high in processed food that contain toxic additives, preservatives, pesticides, GMOs, etc., actually also drain the liver of valuable glutathione. He goes on to say further, oftentimes individuals that consume a diet high in alcohol and processed foods are not consuming the key nutrients they need to produce glutathione, et cetera. Now let me add to that what he's saying. This is one of the reasons, and I see we have a caller, and I'm going to take in just a second. I see you, but I when we're dealing with whenever you eat sugar and milk in the same at the same time, like an ice cream, it creates the same process in the liver as though you were drinking alcohol. And so just remember that. It's one of the things why we talk about how the diet can also affect our liver function. Hello?
Hello?
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. All right. How you doing?
How's it going? I just tuned in.
Oh, did you? You have a question?
I heard you talking about the liver. I'll have one offhand. But, pretty sure in the next couple of minutes I will. Are you talking about the nutrient deficiencies as far as the liver right now?
Right. Just talking about, at this moment, I'm talking about how some of the things that we do to actually, with diet or with environment, it actually depletes the liver. And over long term, if this continues to happen, we would eventually develop some type of disease or a number of diseases or syndromes. What I do is I'll put you back on hold and I'll check on you in a minute if you have any a question to ask.
All right, brother. All right.
Oh, okay. As I was saying before our caller came in, is that one of the things that actually over time that can affect the liver is when you mix sugar and milk together. So, for instance, if you sit down and eat a big bowl of ice cream, the sugar combined with the milk actually has the same effect as if you were drinking alcohol, because the two, when combined together, they ferment. And I'm not talking about soy milk or almond milk, but I'm talking about regular cow's milk. And so when you take these two together, they ferment and they lead, and they have in that fermentation process has the same effect on your liver as if you were drinking alcohol. Now, over time, not today or tomorrow, but over time, you've had people being diagnosed with cirrhosis of the liver who've never drank alcohol, but they ate a continual diet, say, of ice cream every day or 3 or 4 or 5 times a week, and they ended up with cirrhosis of the liver. And they were like, "How did I get cirrhosis of the liver? I've never drank alcohol." And this is one of the things that can cause it. Now, there are some other foods. As we talk further about the liver, the foods that are challenging for the liver should be eliminated. This includes processed and refined foods, and those also that have a lot of chemicals in them. For some people, gluten. For other people, soy. For others, peanuts, pasteurized dairy, and corn. Now, some people can eat gluten with no problem. Other people can eat soy and peanuts with no problem. Now, peanuts should be eaten in moderation. All nuts should be eaten in moderation. But peanuts are basically probably the worst of the – it's not really a nut per se. But your best nut to eat are walnuts and almonds. But generally speaking, these are some of the things that for some people are going to be very problematic for their livers. Now, anybody that has liver challenges should be very vigilant about using or eating as many certified organic food, as much certified organic food as possible. And also, you should be very careful about some of the household products that you use, like a lot of the chemicals that you buy to clean in your homes. A lot of people don't realize, even the soaps that you may use to wash with all the chemicals in them, your skin is an organ. Your skin is an organ in and of itself. Most people don't think of their skin as an organ, but it is. And so all of these things, when we take them in, household cleaners that are chemically based, over time these things, we breathe them in, et cetera, and over time these things put a greater and greater burden on the liver. And after a while, the liver becomes overburdened. And sometimes you ended up with fatty liver and some of the other things that happen because the liver just becomes so weakened. Now, another thing to look out for, again, is that you need to make sure that you drink plenty of fresh water and get a lot of fresh air. We've talked about those 8 laws of health, the first being trust in the Creator, then sunshine, then exercise, then water, then air, then rest, then diet, then self-control / temperance. Now, also, as we're going to talk about when I get to the final segment here, we're going to talk about using milk thistle to help with the liver, which is actually, milk thistle is, in my estimation, probably the single best herb for your liver. And especially when combined with some other processes like beet juice, et cetera. Now, but some of the best liver-benefiting foods include those foods that are rich in B vitamins, that are rich in vitamin C, and as well as rich in other trace minerals. And most foods like this are those that you get, that you eat in line with the colors of the rainbow. Remember, I always say on this show, the closer you eat in line with the colors of the rainbow and the closer you eat in line with the garden, the healthier you will be. And so if you eat those foods that are rich in B vitamins, vitamin C, and trace minerals, which includes lots of raw vegetables, some of the vegetables that include high amounts of vitamin C and vitamin C are things like celery, spinach, cucumbers, romaine lettuce, broccoli, collard greens, mustard greens, all these types of foods, bell peppers, tomatoes. Remember, if you think about what I'm saying, they're all in harmony. They're in harmony with the colors of the rainbow. And what are the colors of the rainbow? Remember the name Roy G. Biv to remember those colors, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet. So remember, the closer you eat in harmony with the colors of the rainbow, the healthier you will be. Finally, another good thing to do is to juice vegetables and to juice fruit. And especially citrus fruit as well as berries are especially good for your liver. They're especially good to help detoxify your liver. And again, there are other herbs that you can use to help keep detoxify the liver, and also to help as a quote liver tonic, if you will, to keep it healthy in the first place. So you have those herbs like ginger, milk thistle, peppermint, parsley, dandelion root, garlic, and turmeric. And we've talked about many of these in previous weeks. And if you're a first-time listener, we have all of these shows that are listed on this page here, and you can go back and listen to some of these shows. But these are some of the things we've talked in detail about how milk thistle can be used for the liver, and we're going to talk some more about it today. We've talked about peppermint and some of its benefits, parsley and some of its benefits, dandelion root, which is another great herb to help benefit your liver as well as your kidneys. Again, that is something that we really want to consider. Your liver is extremely, extremely important. You want to keep it healthy. A lot of people, when they find out that they have liver cancer and or pancreatic cancer, those are two cancers that are not good cancers to have. But the liver if you keep your liver healthy, especially if you're diagnosed with any type of sickness, one of the first things most of us natural practitioners are going to consider is the health of the liver. And if that liver can be detoxified and kept healthy, because it plays such a huge role in many of the body's systems, and detoxification especially, which is always important in sickness, if we can keep that liver healthy, you have a great chance of recovery in whatever the disease or abnormality may be. But if we can't keep that liver healthy and detoxified, if you're sick, then there could be problems. Yeah, I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. You are listening to Phase 3 Wellness. We are still in our first segment. I'm going to go check back over with my caller and see if he had any question or comments with respect to the liver, and then we're going to move into our second article, and we're going to be talking about, on this article, this is the main thrust of what we'll be talking about today, is those drugs that actually affect your libido or your sex drive. And we're going to look at about 11 of them that do so. And so, again, a lot of times when you're taking drugs, you need to understand that all drugs have side effects, negative side effects. And if you're deciding to take them, you just understand that what some of the side effects may be. And these days, when you watch some of the pharmaceutical commercials, some of the side effects are death. So just understand when you are taking them. Now, before we go into into this next segment or to this next article dealing with 11 drugs that can affect your, that actually affect your sex, your sex drive. I'll click back over to my caller and see if he wanted to have say anything or have a question with respect to the liver. Caller, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And what's your name again? I'm sorry, I didn't get your name.
Desmond.
I'm sorry?
Desmond.
Okay, Desmond. Okay. Did you have any question you wanted to ask about the liver at all, or you just wanted to just keep listening?
I had a question and a comment. My comment, it was interesting you were talking about the medications, because whether it's over-the-counter or prescription, or after a while, you know, if you keep taking those medications, that could tax your liver also, you know.
Correct.
And it even says on the package. So, my question was, what would be the cause? Like, let's say if a person had have bumps on their back, would that be the cause of the liver?
It's possible. Usually, a lot of times, whenever I see anything dealing with skin, like say bumps on the back or scaly skin or itching bumps or something of that nature, the first thing that usually comes to my mind would be that there is the areas or the avenues of elimination are probably not functioning up to par, which would include the liver. So normally you would have the liver may not be functioning up to par, the kidneys may not be functioning up to par, the person may not be getting outside, getting fresh air and sunshine so that the lungs can pass out that the impurities in the fresh air, outside in the fresh air, and correct breathing also helps to kick off these toxins. So normally when I see a person who has a lot of bumps on their back or anything like that, any skin issues, almost always the first thing that's going to be involved with that is going to be a question of those areas of elimination that are not functioning up to par. They will also include the liver. The colon. Normally the colon would be involved many times, maybe the liver, maybe the kidneys, maybe the person's not drinking enough water, maybe they're stressing out, because the number one issue that can actually contribute to toxic waste accumulating in the body is stress. And so you take the stress from either emotional stress and or physical stress I know people who've had such emotional stress that has sent them into bouts of days or weeks of constipation. And then as they're sent into this bout of constipation, their organs of elimination are not working because the stress affects that as well. And so it affects the liver, it affects the kidney, over everything. But generally speaking, whenever I see bumps or itching skin or eczema, any of those things, the first thing that I look at is the organs of elimination and the organs of detoxification, being the kidney, the liver, the colon, the exercise, the lungs, things of that nature. And usually, sometimes it even requires some liver detoxification, some cleansing will almost always be necessary in those cases.
Okay. You don't mind me asking, how long did it take you to become an MD, and what school did you attend?
It took me 4 years at Trinity College of Natural Health.
Where is that located?
It's in Indiana.
Okay.
So, yes, it took me.
Okay.
I also had outside training also from other herbalists who run clinics that was outside of the scope of the ND, but herbal teachers that run their own herbal clinics. And so I had some of the things that they don't necessarily teach in most of the ND schools, things like herbal surgery and things of that nature that are really high-end, high-level naturopathic practices.
Herbal surgery. Hey, I've never heard that one.
Right. Yeah. It's pretty intense. And so.
Wow. Herbal surgery. So are you? You have to be in person to learn that, or is it, I don't see nothing online about no herbal surgery. That's a.
Right, right.
Sound.
And, right, and incidentally, we're in the I'm in the process right now here in Orlando of setting up a Natural School of Health, where some of the classes and some of the courses will be available online. Others will be necessary to do online and some hands-on, and then others will be mostly hands-on. And so that is something that that we're looking into doing probably later this year. And it's going to be called Orlando College, Orlando Christian College of Natural Healing. And so that's something that we're looking at doing. So some, like I said, some of the courses and classes will be available online. Others will be a mixture where people can get most of the information, most of the class, because they will be live classes online, and then they may have to come and get the hands-on, or you could call it the clinicals, and then there will be others that that they would need to come there for the majority of the time. But that's where we're headed with that, because this natural medicine is gaining lots of ground, and lots of people are learning that it really works, and that it's not something that's unscientific, that is quite scientific, and it happens to work very well.
Right. By people getting the knowledge of that, the FDA and the government trying to stifle the information, you know, the knowledge of it. So. Yeah.
Right. Right. Yeah, okay. I'm going to take a quick break here, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk about 11 drugs that actually, I'm going to talk about 11 drugs that actually affect your sex drive. I'll be back in just a moment.
Do you know anyone that has health issues? Of course you do. Have you noticed the rise in popularity of natural therapies and alternative medicine? Sure you have. Have you ever wondered if alternative therapies work or if it's just all quackery? Then you need to visit the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog at phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Keith Henry, ND, is trained in natural naturopathy and provides amazing insight at the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog that he has gained from years of hands-on experience. Check it out after this show at phase3ministries.com/WordPress.
How do you feel? No, really. How do you feel? Do you feel lively? Are you bursting with energy? Or do you feel run down and suffer from a lack of energy most of the time? Have frequent colds, aches and pains of one sort or another? The fact of the matter is that most people in America are not well. But you can begin to change all of that today by simply visiting the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog of Keith Henry, ND, at www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress. Go there now and explore the wealth of amazing wellness information. That's www.phase3ministries.com/WordPress, the Simple Natural Health Secrets blog.
Hi, and welcome back to Phase 3 Wellness. Thank you for joining me. I am your host, Dr. Keith Henry. I'd like to thank you for listening, wherever you may be listening from around the world. We're still in our first segment. We're going to go ahead and jump into our main article for today. And this is taken from Mercola.com. And I've named it. The name of the article is actually The Low Libido, 11 Drugs That Affect Your Sex Drive. That's the name of the article. It was published on April the 9th, and we're going to look at 11 of these. There are other ones. There are other drugs that can affect your sex drive as well as other and have other side effects, negative side effects. But we're going to look at these 11 and talk a little bit about what they do and these classes of drugs as well. Now, Mercola starts off to explain in this particular article. He said that it's estimated that between 30 and 40% of people around the globe actually experience a lack of interest in sex for at least several months in any given year. And he says the reasons for low libido are complex and run the gamut from stress and other emotional difficulties to physical problems, including erectile dysfunction. He goes on to say, though, that most people do not seek help for chronic low libido, which is unfortunate because regular sex with a committed partner cannot be underestimated as a factor for reducing stress, bolstering self-esteem, and actually fostering feelings of intimacy and bonding between partners. So one of the things you have to understand when we talk about a topic such as this is that it's not just physical. And most of my female listeners would probably be able to comprehend that on a different level than most of my male listeners, because females tend to be able to comprehend intimacy in a better fashion than most men can when it comes to having, in context of having sex, et cetera. And nevertheless, what he's saying here, he's pointing out how when you're having sex in a committed relationship or committed partner, of course, I address it from a Christian perspective. So I would say with your husband or with your wife, and so he talks about how it's beneficial for reducing stress, for bolstering self-esteem, and fostering feelings of intimacy and bonding between partners. He goes on to point out how a healthy sex life can actually provide for a longer, healthy, and most would agree, more enjoyable life, but many are missing out on this very primal pleasure, he says. Then he goes on to point out oftentimes how libido is related to your lifestyle, and this includes any medications you have taken, and many medications can interfere with your sex drive. And he goes on to talk about 11 of the following, or the following 11, rather. And he goes on to point out how considering the widespread use of many of these, it's likely that medication use is a leading cause of low libido among both men and women. He says if you're taking one of these and have experienced a drop in your libido, talk with your natural health care practitioner about drug-free alternatives. He says many of the drugs that he points out below are used for conditions that are better treated using non-drug methods. The first one he points out is selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors known as antidepressants. He says sexual dysfunction is a frequent side effect of antidepressants, including SSRIs such as Prozac, Zoloft, etc. They are often used as a first-line treatment option for depression. Then he says according to a report in the journal Psychiatry and Neuroscience, quote, he quotes it, sexual dysfunction occurs through several brain pathways involving increases in serotonin, 5-HT, decreases in dopamine, and inhibition of nitric oxide synthase. So it increases in cortical limbic 5-HT result in decreased sexual desire, ejaculation, and orgasm. So let me talk a little bit more about this. I don't want to get too technical here. He says, consequently, it is not surprising that selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors induce sexual dysfunction, and it occurs in 30-80% of patients as a main cause of treatment discontinuation. So basically, let me put this in just layman's terms. Sexual dysfunction occurs, essentially, through several brain pathways. Again, it involves the increase of certain brain chemicals, if you will, natural chemicals in the brain, like decrease in dopamine and 5-HTP and some of these other brain chemicals that occur. And they have a specific balance. And when these balances are thrown off, it can affect your sexual desire. And when they give these antidepressants can actually cause alterations in these brain chemicals, essentially affect your sex drive. Next, he points out tricyclic antidepressants. He says these antidepressants are much less widely used than the newer SSRIs, but they are still prescribed for both depression as well as nerve pain. Like SSRIs, tricyclic antidepressants are also associated with decreased libido. Birth control pills are what is listed next. Now, about 15% of women taking oral contraceptives report a decrease in libido or sex drive, likely because they lower levels of sex hormones. So, in short, birth control pills actually lower the levels of sex hormones in a female's body, including testosterone. Yes, women have testosterone, as do men. It's the only difference is that men have more testosterone. Women have more estrogen. Men also have estrogen. But it's the testosterone men have more, so it gives us more of our male characteristics, if you will, and women have more of the estrogen, which gives them more of their female characteristics. Dr. Mercola points out how one study found that seven times the amount of libido-killing sex hormone binding globin, SHBG, says was present in women who took oral contraceptive or birth control pills compared to women who never used a pill. Because even though this hormone binding substance, this SHBG, which is a hormone binding substance, even though these levels decline in women who stop taking the birth control pill, they still remain 3 to 4 times higher. The amount still remained 3 to 4 times higher in these women with no history than with women who never had a history of using these oral contraceptives or birth control pills. He says this suggests that oral contraceptives may kill a woman's libido for the long term, or it may kill her sex drive for the long term. Then he cites researchers that concluded, quote, long-term sexual, metabolic, and mental health consequences might result as a consequence of chronic SHBG elevation in women who take or have taken oral contraceptives. Well, essentially that means because the birth control pill causes this SHBG, which is basically mean hormone binding globin levels to increase rather than a female's body, and then when this increases, it causes her sex drive to decrease as a result of taking these birth control pills. And this is not even to mention some of the other side effects that also occur when these birth control pills are taken. We're just talking about the effect that they have on the body. In terms of your sex drive. The next one is Proscar. Proscar belongs to a class of drugs called 5-alpha reductase inhibitors, and they are used to treat enlarged prostate. So, of course, you know, most people know what the prostate is. It's a walnut-sized gland that males have. And particular drug, a class of drugs, Proscar, is one that belongs to this class of drugs called 5-alpha reductase inhibitors. And they basically help to shrink the prostate. And those of us who might have developed enlarged prostate. Now, normally, if you have an enlarged prostate, there are a number of factors that can be contributed to that. One of the number one causes is not eating a healthy diet, overstimulation of it. In other words, too much sex over time, and not getting enough exercise. Some of these things can actually contribute over time, especially bad diet, to that prostate enlarging. Then you go and get this drug, and as a result, some people drug will help shrink the prostate, but it comes with significant risk, one of which is a lower libido from the lower testosterone. So again, there's natural things that you can do to help shrink your prostate, and do some of and most of these other things that you can do. There's natural things that you can do. And in many cases, get far better results. You're going to always get far better results in the long term, but many times even in the short term. Next drug is Propecia, which is a balding drug. It's similar to the drug we talked about earlier, Proscar, but it's typically used in a lower dose, as Dr. Mercola points out in his article, to prevent hair loss in men. It says this drug works by reducing DHT, which is the most potent male hormone, and is linked to shrinking hair. So by blocking the enzyme 5-alpha reductase, so... And to make a long story short, and I'm quoting Dr. Mercola, he says it has been linked to not only decreased interest in sex, but also to full-blown impotence. So here we have a situation to where, say you start losing your hair, and as a result of losing your hair, you say, I'm going to go to the doctor, and I'm going to see if I can get something. And say the doctor prescribes Propecia. Okay, you begin to take the drug, and you notice that you begin to have, you don't have much interest in sex anymore. You have decreased libido, and then, for some men, you go into full-blown impotence to where you can no longer even function sexually. And that's not a good trade-off. I think I would keep the balding hair as opposed to losing my capacity to function sexually. Dr. Marcolo goes on to say, further, BBC News followed one story, he says, of a 26-year-old who took Propecia for male pattern baldness. He stopped taking the drug when he noticed a decreased interest in sex. Then a few weeks later, he became impotent. Even after 6 months of testosterone therapy, his sexual health had not been restored, and his physician suggested a penile implant as a solution. He says many men have found that the sexual side effects do not go away once the drug is stopped. And one of the reasons this happens is because what you have to understand is that when you take drugs, and even sometimes herbs, which is not a bad thing for herbs, but when you're taking drugs, when you consider all of the side effects that drugs have, just because you stop taking them, you have to realize some of these drugs remain in the tissues. They remain in the body to some degree, and so their effect is almost like a time-release effect that these drugs, but they're so powerful, and they get into the tissues, and unless you go through a thorough detox, cleansing, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, at times they essentially release into the body and to keep doing the damage or keep the side effects going on and on and on. The next one is antihistamines. These are some prescriptions, some over-the-counter, like Benadryl, are also linked to a temporary loss of libido. Once the medication is cleared from your body, your sex drive should go back to normal, but if you take these medications often, such as for allergy treatment, it could pose a longer-term problem for your sex life, says Dr. Marcola in this article. Again, that's antihistamines. If you have allergies, et cetera, again, talk to your natural health care practitioner about making some changes before you just run and start taking these drugs, because they are potential side effects. The next one is medical marijuana. Medical marijuana is legal so far in 20 states, where it's commonly used to treat pain and nausea and other conditions. It can actually help dampen your libido and ability to perform. It can actually dampen the ability for men to perform sexually. And then also you have anti-seizure drugs, the drugs that are commonly known to use to prevent seizures. Because these actually dampen your nerve impulses, it can also help reduce pleasurable sensations which are derived from sexual contact. Reduced sexual desire is common among those who take these anti-seizure drugs. One study found, for instance, that epileptic men taking some of these anti-seizure drugs actually had changes in their hormone levels. They also had altered semen quality. It increased their erectile dysfunction, or their ability to have an erection. And it reduced their frequency of sexual intercourse. Also, opioids like Vicodin, Oxycontin, Percocet. Also have been widely connected. These are widely prescribed painkillers, but they've been connected also with lower testosterone levels, which also may lower your libido or your sex drive. Then there are beta blockers. Tens of millions of Americans take beta blockers to lower their blood pressure. And these medications, too, also decrease your libido. Even eye drops contain the beta blocker, Timolol, for the treatment of glaucoma, Dr. Marcola says in his article, may actually impact your sex drive. He says in the vast majority of cases, drugs are not needed to reverse hypertension. And also, those are just some of the problems, some of 11 of the drugs that actually can cause issues, side effects. And I was going quicker than I really wanted to go, but I'm running a little bit behind time, and I want to go over into this last 15 minutes. We're going to talk about a little bit more. I want to talk about two things. First, I'm going to go through the antioxidant in our healing food segment. We're not going to take a break here. We're going to go ahead and go into this, and because I want to get to the last segment on some of the things you can do on how using milk thistle, especially for the liver, but for other things as well. But I want to talk about the healing food, and our healing food this week is honey, and how honey can be used. It is used. It has antibiotic qualities or properties. Now, there are different types of honey to use. You can use. But honey is a natural antibiotic. So let's talk a little bit about why you might want to use honey as an antibiotic. One of the things is conventional antibiotics have been overprescribed and overconsumed. Right now, it's given out like candy almost. In 2010, data obtained by the United States Centers for Disease Control, the CDC, show that a whopping 833 antibiotic prescriptions are handed out on average per every 1,000 people. That's a lot. So for every 1,000 people that you see, a whopping 833 antibiotic prescriptions have been handed out to them. So now what has happened is doctors who will carelessly prescribe me the antibiotics for viral infections. Now let me stop for a moment. I've said it here before. Antibiotics do nothing for viral infections. Nothing. Zero. Zilch. They don't do anything for viral infections. So if you have a viral infection like a cold, for instance, why would you go to the doctor and he give you a antibiotic for a cold that's being caused by a virus? It doesn't do anything. Antibiotics do help bacteria. The problem is when they're overprescribed, they always don't wipe out all of the bacteria in the body. It always leaves some, a little bit. And that bacteria becomes resistant to antibiotics. So next time you have to come back with a strong antibiotic. But it didn't kill off everything either. So it leaves a few left behind, which become resistant. So then they give another, come up with a different antibiotic, which does the same thing. So after a while, they created an entire new strand or family of antibiotic-resistant strands of different types of viruses, or rather bacteria even. And so we have to understand that as well, why we're getting into a situation where we've been so overly medicated with antibiotics in some cases that antibiotics now or the bacteria are becoming resistant, and now the antibiotics are not working anymore. And so the CDC has recently also identified 20 resistant strains of bacteria thanks to reckless dependency on some of these prescriptions. Now, not only that, there was a 2013 report by the CDC where they pointed out that over 2 million people contract antibiotic-resistant infections every year, and conventional antibiotics are making users sicker in the long run and more vulnerable and more prone to infection later on. So remember, if at all possible, go with natural antibiotics. And there are many. I've mentioned some on here before. I've mentioned garlic. I've mentioned colloidal silver. I've mentioned high doses of vitamin C. A couple of weeks ago, we were talking about the different olive leaf extract. All these are natural antibiotics, and there are more. Very, very powerful natural antibiotics. When used correctly and used properly, they can not only wipe out bacteria, but they can also wipe out viruses, something that regular traditional antibiotics cannot do. So let's look at something that is a very potent antibiotic, and that is honey. In fact, the researchers from the Sal Regina University in Newport, Rhode Island, are actually rediscovering reasons why raw honey is still one of the best natural antibiotics around to this day. And lead author Susan M. Mechwick, Ph.D., presented her finding at the 247th National Meeting of the American Chemical Society, and she reported, quote, "The unique property of honey lies in its ability to fight infection on multiple levels, making it more difficult for bacteria to develop resistance." Now, let me pause this as well, is that honey, I have a mixture that I call herbal stitches, and the mixture is for deep cuts, deep wounds, I mean cuts even clear down to the bone, and I use basically, honey is one of the main constituents in it with a couple of other components. But the reason that I put the honey in there is because the honey actually keeps the infection, the bacterial infection, that wound from becoming infected. And so this is one of the things that natural practitioners have known for a long, long time, the ability of not only honey, raw honey, even table sugar can do it if you don't have raw honey around. But honey is a lot better. Table sugar can do the same thing. But not to the same degree, to a similar degree as honey, if you will. Now, in this particular study by lead author M. Mechwick from the South Regina University in Newport, Rhode Island, she said that honey uses a combination of weapons, including polyphenols, hydrogen peroxide, and an osmotic effect, and that honey is practically an ambidextrous fighter, using multiple modalities to kill bacteria. Now, who would have thought that honey actually has the capacity to kill bacteria? And this osmosis effect come from honey's high sugar concentration. And in this process, this osmosis effect or this osmotic effect that she talks about has an effect that works in this way. In this process, water is drawn from the bacteria cells, leaving the pathogens no option but to dehydrate and die off. So basically, honey causes the cells of the bacteria to become dehydrated, and they can't survive, and they die. Honey also possesses properties that actually stop the formation of biofilms. Now, these biofilms, they're very slimy, and these slimy biofilms are bacteria communities which harbor diseases. And what honey does, honey actually keeps these biofilms from congregating by breaking up bacteria communication process called what's scientifically called quorum sensing. So by breaking up this process, honey actually stops the bacteria from communicating with each other. This hinders their capacity to communicate, essentially, and to proliferate and grow. Without this communication mode, the bacteria cannot release the toxins that actually increase their ability to cause disease. So here we have another natural product, a food even, honey, that the Creator has actually built into honey a natural processes which hinder the way that bacteria can function and proliferate and grow and cause death even. Now remember, there are some bacteria that can do a lot of damage to the body, can even cause death. And let's take MRSA, for instance. That's a bacteria. And it can cause death, and some people are developing strands that are resistant to antibiotics. Now, in this particular study, Meshwick said that by disrupting quorum sensing, the virulent behavior of bacteria is actually weakened, rendering the bacteria more susceptible to even to conventional antibiotics. So, essentially, herbal and natural antibiotics should be given first. And the drug antibiotics, if given at all, should be given as a last resort. A lot of people, whenever you find a practitioner who is experienced and knowledgeable, they will have had time, they will have had experience, they will have had occasions to learn mixtures of different antibiotics, natural antibiotics that work for different cases. And again, you have to remember, everybody has different blood chemistry. Everybody is different. So sometimes you will have something that works 99% of the time, and then the practitioner may have to come up with a different mixture or a different combination of herbs or whatnot to get the same effect. And of course, the person who has this infection, the question has to be asked, how did you get this infection in the first place? How was your immune system so compromised to a bacteria or a virus was able to gain a foothold? So as in that process, while you're trying to reverse or work on the symptoms, you also must work on boosting the immune system, because the Creator has given us the number one disease cure for every disease and infection, and that's our immune system. So there are other ways that you can use. You can use honey in different ways. And there's Manuka honey. We've talked about that a little bit before. Maybe I'll go into a lot more detail at a later date. Because when you think about what honey is, you look at how honey works. And I'm not going to go into all the details, because I'm down to about 7 minutes. I want to get to how the benefits of milk thistle. But if you look at honey, honey is antibacterial, it's antiviral, and it's antifungal. So if you take these properties alone, it being antibacterial, antiviral, and antifungal, actually make it more powerful than most conventional antibiotics. So honey can actually target undetected fungal conditions that may be the root cause of perpetual illness. There's some people who have fungus in their blood, who they're always sick. There's always some problem. And it's because there's an underlying issue with infection or inflammation or whatever. And now, in this particular study that I reference here, the lead author, again, by the name of Meshwitz, said that her team of researchers have been measuring the level of antioxidant activity of honey. She says, quote, "We have separated and identified the various antioxidant polyphenol compounds. In our antibacterial studies, we have been testing honey's activity against E. coli and some other ones." And she says, "While many commercial brands of honey are filtered and fake, the best place to look for delicious, medicinal, and unfiltered raw honey is at local honeybee farms." So again, he is correct. Some of the commercial honeys that you get in the regular grocery stores, they've been, all of the benefits have been processed out of them. So if you can get raw honey, especially at these local shops, these little places, many times that's the best honey that you could get. Sometimes health food stores will carry the real deal as well. Now, my name is Dr. Keith Henry. We have about 5 minutes left, and we're going to pivot over to the last segment where we're going to be talking about milk thistle. Now, I've talked on the show before about milk thistle and the liver, and I wanted to talk about a little bit more since in the first segment we talked about the liver and the importance of it. Now, milk thistle's effects on the liver, on your liver health, actually have a direct impact on a number of other bodily functions and health conditions as well. So let's think about it. It helps those attempting to recover from substance addiction, including drugs and alcohol. And let's again, we think about this with milk thistle now. Milk thistle can actually boost the liver's ability to deal with environmental triggers. It can actually help those suffering from chronic allergies, especially those who have multiple chemical allergies as a cause of multiple chemical sensitivity. Milk thistle, when it's taken correctly, actually increases the bile production by your liver, which then helps the body to remove via your bowel excess issues, an excess poisons and trash that may have accumulated into your body. As I was talking with Desmond on the call earlier, I'm talking about how when we're dealing with these things, one of the organs of elimination is your colon. And it has to be moving freely so it can move these impurities out of the body. Because what's going to happen, if those impurities back up in the body, you're going to get things like these impurities will begin to circulate in the bloodstream. And many times you get what's called auto-intoxication, where you can get so backed up, especially in the colon area, that these impurities will spill over into the bloodstream. And then you will see manifestations like a lot of bumps made in different places on the body. These bumps may itch. Sometimes you see eczema, psoriasis, whatever the different skin problems you will always typically see when the organs of elimination are not functioning up to par. And this, again, this will include the colon, many times the liver, the kidneys, the lungs, etc. Also, again, as I said earlier, by boosting liver function, milk thistle can actually help to remove harmful toxins in the blood, which can actually also can cause skin flare-ups. So again, even when you begin to think about how important that, you know, you may have flare-up here or there, and people may go to the doctor and they may be given some cream or whatnot, and the cream will actually cause the toxins to be driven back into the body, and it actually exacerbates the problem. So again, because milk thistle is so good for the liver, it actually is helpful for other skin conditions like chronic rashes, eczema, and psoriasis, as I said earlier. By increasing the bile production, it also helps to relieve constipation. And also, people, when you have these herbs like milk thistle that actually help to increase the bile, this also helps in alleviating problem with those who have things like Crohn's disease. Again, that's Crohn's disease is an inflammatory bowel disease which can be traced back to bad eating. Milk thistle also helps to relieve intestinal inflammation, and it also has been used for inflammatory bowel disorders as well. Again, because I'm out of time, I'm going to have to continue this next Sunday, talking a little bit more about the liver and the capacity of milk thistle to grant you great, great benefit. And I will give you next week, I will plan to give you details on how to use it. I will plan to make recommendations on how to use it for certain detoxification plans of the liver. And not only milk thistle, but some other things that you can do to help detoxify the liver. Until then, make sure you drink plenty of water, get fresh air and sunshine, have trust in the Creator, get exercise. Don't stress out, you know, it's not that big of a deal. Don't take things. Welcome.
Don't
take things too seriously, unless they are that serious. And then even those things you can't take too seriously. I'd like to thank you for joining me. Again, I'd remind you to join me next week, and we'll continue this. If you didn't join at the beginning of the show, you might have missed something. The replay will be available in about 5 minutes, roughly. You can go back and listen. Again, be free to go and listen to any of the archives. We have a lot of good information in the archives. You can download it through a CD if you wish. Put it in your car, listen, give it to your friends, send them the link. Give the gift of health. Until next week, good evening.